Our reading this morning is from the book of Revelation. It's a traditional reading for this day liturgically, the celebration of All Saints. And this is a book of visions that had a lot to do with the historical setting of John's time, some of the political and the ecclesiastical struggles, as well as the individuals trying to find salvation. And this is John's response to that need. In this particular part, he's describing what we would call heaven. And interesting description. But one that certainly has nurtured people for many centuries. This from chapter 7 of Revelation. After this, I looked, and there was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, robed in white, with palm branches in their hands. And they cried out in a loud voice, saying, "Salvation belongs to our God, who is seated on the throne, and to the Lamb." And all the angels stood round the throne and around the elders and the four living creatures. And they fell on their faces before the throne and worshipped God, singing, "Amen. Blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be to our God forever and ever. Amen." Then one of the elders addressed me, saying, "Who are these robed in white? And where have they come from?" I said to him, "Sir, you are the one that knows." Then he said to me, "These are they who have come out of the great ordeal. They have come out of the great struggle and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb." The word of the Lord. The image of heaven has been something that since childhood, I think each one of us has held before us as the accomplishment or the fulfillment or at least the desire or the fulfillment of God's promises for us. And so it is filled with idealism. Heaven has been that place for so many people, like we saw in the movies. You know, heaven can wait where, you know, man dies before his time and he goes to heaven and gets sent back as another person and goes through this whole discovery of what life is all about, has a different perspective on life after he dies. Or What's a Wonderful Life, which is coming on television very shortly for Christmas, you know, where the poor guy has an experience of an angel, and the angel tells him that he has to do certain things and to be faithful and strong, etc., and gives him an image of his past life. So his whole life passes before him, so to speak, and he comes to a whole new way of living and finds that life is wonderful after all, even though you go bankrupt. All of us have our own images. I have one. I think one of the things that all of us want is a fulfillment. We want to have enlightenment. We want to understand the mysteries. I know if you're like me, in your back pocket, you're going to have a list of all the questions that you want to ask God that could never be answered here. We finally want some solution and some closure on human life as we know it. One of the things, too, we want all of us to have what we want the most, our desires filled. One of my desires when I get to heaven is I want to be able to conduct and play the piano in Rachmaninoff 1, 2, and 3 just over and over and over again and never have to have any critics. And no lessons either. All those things are wonderful things. And we have here in the story this morning the image of the time period of what heaven would be like in John's version. And it's a vision. And certainly, I think these things can be very encouraging. And books like Mitch Albom's book, The Three or Five People You're Going to Meet in Heaven, those kinds of things that make us aware that there is something more, etc. That's always very, very encouraging for us. I just want to make a couple of points because we're getting late here this morning. We had last Sunday, we talked about the greatest commandment, and we all had opportunity to share our thoughts on the statement that the greatest commandment is, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. Okay, we talked a little bit about that. I'd like to underscore this passage, and any discussion about heaven would be underscored by that reality, because Jesus came to say something to us that God wanted us to know. And what Jesus did was basically pushed aside all of Judaism and all the theologies of the day and boiled it down to a simple thing about having a relationship with the world around us, a relationship that not only transforms the world, but also transforms us in the process. That's what he did in his life. That's why he spent all of his time with the people nobody else wanted. That's why he focused his whole attention on the poor, the broken, the downtrodden, the beaten, all the rest of those isolated and abandoned people, because that is what God expects of us. Everybody outside that group has what they need. They have relationships, they have power, they have respect, they have dignity, they have all those things. The group he spent his time with were the ones that had none of that. And that was to tell us something. To tell us what we as Christian people believe has changed the whole focus of human life. And that's very simply in this little phrase. What Jesus came to tell us and to show us was that God has irrevocably bonded God's self to humanity. It's an irrevocable incarnation that has taken place, that cannot be changed, will not be changed, and cannot be altered by anything we come up with in our own machinations of living. What that means is that from the time of Jesus, who embodied that God and became what we celebrate as the Christ, which is the image of the one who was there for the redemption and the saving and the unification of the whole world as one, that Christ is ours. And you don't earn a place to be with the Christ. You don't have to believe certain things to be with the Christ. You don't have to have any sense at all of what is happening. Because in every life, it happens. For example, the commandment says, you will love the Lord your God with your whole heart. What is loving God? If we know God at God's best, God is the embodiment of love relationship. There is no change, there's no alteration, it is just pure love. That's what Jesus taught us, which is why in his exampled living, he did nothing more than touch the world with a love that transformed people's lives and called us to do the same. Every one of us has had a moment of transformation in our lives. Have you ever been surprised that something wonderful just took place that you never expected? And it had nothing to do with what you accomplished or did. It was just a gift. That's an experience of God. If you've ever had an experience of knowing that somebody loves you, who you are, just the way you are, with all the warts and dimples, your beauty, your underside, the good stuff and the not so good stuff, loves you as you are. If you've had that experience, if you had a moment of that experience, you have been touched by God. Most human experiences in human life really are God acting out again and again and again. Unfortunately, what we've done is we've relegated God to a place like this, to certain rituals and certain activities, and then you have God. You do this stuff, and then you'll find God. We've missed the whole point. What Jesus came to say was, in every relationship on earth, there is God. And the beauty and the dignity that you experience through someone else, that is God. And the love that you have as husband, wife, as partners, as parents of children, as grandparents, which we love very much, that is God. God is not someplace out there waiting with the clouds, with the angels, and what we have here as an image. Jesus never said that. What Jesus spent his time doing, and if it was so important, why wouldn't he? It is about relationships with one another. And to love with your whole mind, brothers and sisters, is probably the greatest challenge, because our minds are things that like to grab hold and so define and so spell out that we are now in control. We go to school all of our lives to learn how to control the world around us. If you're participating in the world in a healthy way, you are controlling a part of it that allows you to be part of the bigger picture. It's a control thing, and that's a good thing. However, when you are most out of control is when God can come more realistically and more easily. To love with your mind, brothers and sisters, is to be open. To be open to the possibility that at any moment, through a positive experience or a challenge or a word spoken or a simple gesture from someone, you become a different person. The challenge is to be really, really open, so that the experience and the presence of God with you, you will be able to absorb. Now, open-minded doesn't mean that you get so open-minded that your brains fall out. It means that you are willing to listen to your life, to listen to the challenges, listen deeply to them. Not be outdone by them, not be overwhelmed by them, but listen to them, because in the very depths of that experience, there is God. The irresistible, irreversible experience of God in Jesus is given for our lives. And what that means, brothers and sisters, is that, as we said at the table, as we said in our prayers, all of us are part of the communion of saints. That is, those people who live and abide in the presence of God. But it is not just we who are here. It is not just those who fill the pews. It is not just those who attend the synagogue or go to the mosque. It is not those who sit in a corner and meditate and reflect and levitate. It is for all people, the people of this earth, of every generation. We are the communion of saints, because every one of us has been made sacred by the incarnation of God in Jesus to the human family. That's why this table is so important. And that is why we must never, ever be so overwhelmed that we lose sight of that very simple truth. What is heaven going to be like? If I go before you, listen for Rachmaninoff in the winds. Other than that, heaven is really right here. Only sometimes I don't have the eyes to see it, because God is just as present here as God will be anywhere. And I do believe that a person who is dying has the fullest experience of that, because letting go of this life opens up and parts away all those things that keep us blind, and they stand in one moment to see eternal love, eternal healing, eternal bonding and unity, and a presence of God in everything that they've ever seen or heard. God is there. So remembering the holy ones who have gone before us, the ones we prayed for this morning, the ones we continue to have in our prayers, the ones who will always be alive in our hearts, brothers and sisters, that is us, and that is heaven, right here. There's a little thing in the prayer this morning, and this little insert, I just happened to read this morning, these lines. It's talking about the light and being in the light. There in the presence of the fire that is called day, our lights will be consumed, and we will see each other's faces truly for the first time, without mystery or suspicion. Sounds like heaven to me. What came to mind without suspicion? Don't forget to vote on Tuesday. Okay. Amen.